The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFURP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at bearddragongames.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
Casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls with me, Taylor.
Hi, Taylor.
But more importantly, that's Dan, who's hi, not Dan. Your personal grudge bearer. Hi, Dan.
Wait.
Say hi, Dan.
Hi.
Say hi, Dan. Hi, Dan.
Oh, my gosh. What's up, party people? How are you? I hope everybody's doing great today. I'm a little tired, so I'm sorry. My brain's firing on no cylinders.
Right. I was going to say, I'm party pooped.
Oh, dude, I had one of those. I feel like every time I drink one of the gigantic battery white monsters in like 3 hours, I'm just crashed. Absolutely crashed. Anyway,
it takes you 3 hours to drink it?
No, after I drink it, I'm just I got to go to bed.
What?
No, usually I take a long time with those ones because they have a cap. And if it's not just sitting there open, my anxiety isn't like it's going to spill, you know.
I'm just like, oh, this tastes so good. I need to drink more.
I'll drink more of it.
Just give him some more of it.
Anyways. what's up, folks? Listen, before we get started, I wanted to send one of them their big old huge dowie thank yous to our beautiful, wonderful patrons who support us over at patreon.com/professionalcasual.
Yeah, yeah.
These folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating whatever Dan's printing off for this event we're going to talk about.
The Elven Waystones.
Yeah, and dwarf stuff, right?
Yesterday and today I printed two more of the dwarf statues. I couldn't remember if I started, yeah. If I got two today, but no, I had to, they take like 7 hours, so.
Oh yeah, two more Elven Waystones on the way. Well, I mean, at least you got the two good things out of the way first.
So now I have three dwarf statues.
Whoa.
So we can dwarf it up.
Listen, if there, I might have to dwarf it while we're in there.
Dwarf it up. Dwarfadelphia.
Doing my head sideways like, yeah. What is it? Not Night at the Museum.
Quagmire? Yeah.
No. Oh, that would work too. Anyways, send a thank you to our current big subbies. We've got X-Paxis, Rob, Iron Mace, Tau, Dagda, Bicon, Briar, Mage, Cider Drinker, Kilted, Sparky, Leroy, Otis, Random Guy, Cliff Jumper, Villacenda, Speaks with Wind, Pagan Prince, David, Handsome Andy, Brooks, Chris Dillard, and Cordix VR.
Cord.
Cord's dope. They're all dope. Everybody's dope. Oh, yeah. By the way, we have a tier. It's called Electric Casuals. I don't know if you guys knew about this, but if you wanted to show your love for the show directly, you could sign up there.
You can.
And then you can do it. That's something that you can do. And the folks that have signed up there are Tony M, Meerkat. The M in Tony M, I don't believe stands for Meerkat. They're two different people. Although I have not seen them both in the same room at the same time. Stefan, RevRight, Matt Cliff, Elite 8 Showdown was canceled. Anthony, Manuel, The Neil Harris, Lil Willie, Carlos, and Nick Barron. Thanks, folks, for your support.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. My brain just shut off. What are we doing? Oh, Dan.
I was waiting for your cue.
What's next?
His eyes just glazed over like, duh. Oh, yeah.
I'm doing way too much at once. The next thing that I wanted to talk about was games played and hobbies hobbied.
Games played and hobbies hobbied.
I've gotten zero done besides Minecraft.
I mean, that's kind of a game and a hobby at the same time, just not this game.
Yes. I am being paid by YouTube. Does that make it a hobby, or am I now a professional?
I used to subscribe to the idea that if you got paid for it, you were a professional, but my opinion has kind of changed where, like, I feel like you're not really a professional something until it's your job. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because, like, behind that. I've gotten a couple checks from the network over the years.
And
I was like, there, I'm officially a professional GM. But it's like, well, I don't GM for a living, though. Not currently. Okay, so, it would be nice to, but.
So it needs to be your main income?
I guess. I don't know. I haven't totally decided how I feel about defining that.
Right? Because you know, said personally. A job. So at this point, the amount that I'm going to get paid from YouTube relatively soon, if that continues by a month-by-month basis, it will not be my main income. But it would be enough that I would consider it a part-time job.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so
dope.
Am I a professional? Or am I a dabbler?
Yeah. Yeah, you're a professional.
Okay, cool.
Professional cutie pie.
Girl?
I just applied today to be a GM on Start Playing, which is a site. I think it was created by, or one of the creators is, I just lost his name. Brennan.
Dude Guy Face.
Yeah, from Dimension 20, that guy. Brennan.
Oh, okay.
Lee Mulligan.
Okay.
And I'd made an account back in like almost a year ago. It was at August before school started. And it was like, oh, maybe I could do this, you know, once or twice a week, make a couple bucks here and there to help support game stuff. And then I just, you know, with a new job, I never got around to it.
Yeah.
So I just realized tonight, I was looking at the site tonight and I was like, oh, I have to like apply to be a GM. I can't just be a GM. And I was like, I actually really like that because there's, you know, some vetting of it. So you don't just get whoever that might not be good at it, you know? I plan on that being my summer job. I'm hoping to run like 3 or 4 sessions a week or maybe more of different games that service.
Hell yeah.
Which would be pretty dope. So I plan on running, you know, WFRP, probably some Pathfinder or Starfinder second edition, maybe even some of the Marvel Multiverse RPG if my starter set ever is a thing.
Arrives.
Oh my God, I'm still so mad. So I finally found out that the starter set that I pre-ordered for that through GameFound is a deluxe version of the starter set that I didn't realize was a different thing. So like it comes with cards for the superpowers, which is actually incredibly handy. So I'm like, oh, I'm glad I ordered that.
It sounds like a really dope game. I think we were I don't know if it was us talking about it on the way to Everwinter or if it was something we were talking about in the way to Adepticon. I can't remember, but it sounds really dope.
It seems cool. We played a couple times when it was the play test. And then the final game was actually quite different in a good way.
Yeah, it was Everwinter then. Yep.
I definitely want to play it at all. Like I've been, as soon as this starter set comes in, I definitely plan on doing some content with it. And then maybe more because it's Marvel and it's great and it's a good game.
Who doesn't want to be superhero?
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways, what were we talking about?
Games played and hobbies. So I haven't really gotten much of either as well lately. Been printing a bunch. We got from... I think he's on the list for Electric Casual. He might actually be above Electric Casual. Let me make sure we put him on there. Anthony Anton von Sedgwick. He was asking in their Discord, the Hammer Bros Discord. He was like, yo, anybody want templates for spells? And I was like, yes, I've not been able to find these. And he shipped them to the P.O. box. And so he gave us a really awesome 3D printed fancy template for Pillar of Fire and Power of Crystal.
Heck yeah.
So
dope.
So I've been working on getting them fancified for the table. So hopefully we see them in play during the narrative event, which I think last week we got ahead of the game and said it was that coming weekend.
Whoops.
And then it was like, oh no, that's not this week. We're not doing an event the day before Mother's Day. None of us are that dumb.
All right, so just so everybody knows, it is the 17th of May.
I'm pretty sure we said that, and then we're like, yeah, this coming weekend when the episode came out on, like, the 5th. Like, dummies.
Nope. Nope. It is not the day
before Mother's Day. So if you're like, oh, no, I missed it. You didn't miss it yet at time of this episode coming out. Correct.
It's this coming weekend.
It is for real this coming weekend. You can find it on... Best Coast Pairings, if you're interested, if you know anywhere near the upstate New York area, and only at Bearded Dragon Games in Oneonta, we'd love to have a couple more people.
Yeah.
If we have too many, then we don't have enough stuff.
Terrain and whatnots. But
yeah, because Brooks has been going crazy. He made castle walls, he made siege towers. He built a whole bunch of mortars that are part of this scenario, which we'll be talking about today. He's been going, ham. Yeah, dude.
Man is a menace in a good way.
Right. And I've had my 3D printer going brr.
3D printer go brr. Brr, brr, brr. Yeah, it's going to be absolutely incredible. And that is the topic of the day. Brooks has put his heart and soul into this event, and I am very excited to put my minis on a table and throw dice at people. It's gonna be so much fun.
Right.
Not like Tisdale throwing dice across rooms, although that was also fun.
It was very funny.
It was extremely funny.
Mostly because it wasn't aimed at me, it was Tim. Well, it wasn't aimed at Tim, but it was because of Tim's actions.
Correct.
Playing the game that they were playing, you know.
Making
how dare he play the game?
Oh man, what a great event! Will and I finished up our last game for that event, and I won. I didn't tie him, and I'm really upset about it.
Oh, congrats! Yeah. When did you do that?
A couple of weekends ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was fun.
Cool.
He's such a good dude. Will Castillo.
Castillo,
thank you. He's on the Game Store Guardians podcast, if you're into MCP. Yeah. So Game Store Guardians. Will is probably one of the most wholesome human beings right next to Cliff Jumper that I've ever, and X-Paxis. Like, it's just, oh my gosh.
Right, they're just this great community, people.
Yeah, this community is just unreal how wonderful these people are.
Yeah, and I finally asked too. Him at Adepticon. Right. Sorry.
I'd hang out with him.
What?
No, if you keep talking over me, Brooks won't be able to hear that, so it's okay. Go on.
Oh no. I can't wait to listen back to that. I was saying someone at Adepticon said Will Castillo, and I was like, wait, it's Castillo? I've never said it out loud. I've always said it in my head as Castillo. And I was like, but Castillo makes sense with the two L's. So then I asked him, how do you say your last name? And he's like, Castillo. And I was like, okay.
But I'm from New York, so it's Will Castillo.
he's from New Jersey.
Yeah, so it's whatever I say it is.
In New Jersey, it's Will Castillo.
New Jersey. How do you spell Joyzy?
I don't even
J-O-U-R-S-E?
I was thinking J-O-I.
J-O-I? That's Joy? Yeah, Joyzy.
Joyzy.
Yeah. No, but that makes it sound like joy, and I don't like that.
I feel like so many people that aren't American are going to be like, what are they talking about? I feel, especially if you're not a New Yorker or a New Jerseyan. What do you call somebody from New Jersey? New Jerseyite?
Bad. I'm sorry.
You say bad.
Yeah. Half of my heritage is from Long Island, so I have to just dislike Jersey. Everyone I know from Jersey is fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't met somebody from New Jersey I dislike. It's just that.
For real.
It's the like.
I'm from New York.
Yeah, it's like that. I don't want to say bread, like. It's not even real prejudice or animosity. Yeah. It's totally a joke. Because every time I hear New Jersey, I think of, I forget who it was. I think it was Fred Armisen on SNL who was doing Governor, what was his name, Patterson. It's just New Jersey. It's so stupid, but classic.
There's only a couple of parts of Joyzy that I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, Philadelphia. Absolutely.
No, stop. Don't say anything bad about Philly. They'll kill us. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. I know. But I got a man on the inside. Ben is there, and he'll take care of us.
I'm so scared of that.
Right, man. But You're so scared of Philadelphia?
Yes, I'd rather badmouth Brooklyn. I'm not going to badmouth Brooklyn, okay? Please don't hurt me. I'd rather badmouth Brooklyn. Like, I'm less afraid of them.
Yeah, and Philadelphians are nuts.
They're in the best way possible. I love all of them. They're fantastic people. Please don't kill me or my family. Dan, shut up. Dan, shut up.
I don't know if they really are in Minecraft. I don't
want to die today or soon.
All right, let's talk about our narrative event here.
Oh, jeez. 15 minutes in. Let's go.
Storming the castle.
Literally.
Yeah, that's what we have it labeled here. Brooks pretty much did all the work and was like, hey, what do you think? And we gave him a couple ideas to tweak things. He got to play test it the other day.
Heck yeah.
In his local store. And he said he's made a couple little changes based on that play test, which is awesome. At time of recording, I'm going to see if I might be able to get a game in this weekend to play test one of the scenarios.
Nice.
But I'm not sure if you know, life will allow it with kids stuff and everything. And Mother's Day. Oh, never mind. I forgot it's Mother's Day weekend. I probably should.
By the way, it's Mother's Day weekend, so don't do that.
Don't do that. So he's got even a little story here to get us started. Says, in the early ages, the servants of the Old One built a network of stones, known by many names, Ogham stones, Way stones, and more, which harness the power of the natural backdrop of magical forces and ley lines in the mortal realm. One of these stones, such as one centered on a major ley line nexus in Albion, could be used to affect the nature of magic for hundreds of leagues around it. Its destruction would weaken the Elven Waystone network built on it, causing a surge in the powers of chaos in the world. During the early war with chaos, the servants of the Old Ones were forced to flee Albion, burying the stone deep as to safeguard it. Time cannot hide things forever, and the lands abandoned were re-inhabited by younger races which dig, and eventually the stone returned to the hands of mortals. The rulers of the city in which it was found had not yet determined what to do with it, I can read, and perhaps not even comprehend what they had found before tales began to spread. Neighbors, from motives born of jealousy, greed, distrust, or hostility, move on the city, intent on gaining control of the stone to their own ends.
I just want to point out that Dan is not the English teacher. That is Danny. So I get it. Reading is difficult. Right. That's why Tim doesn't do it.
Well, I should have read through it. I mean, I read through it back when Brooks gave us the file, but I should have reread it before I tried to read it out loud.
Reading anything out loud on camera is impossible.
Right. And I feel I do it regularly on different shows. But the story of this Waystone or Ogham Stone is going to be broken up into two battles throughout the day. Right now, it's just called Scenario 1 Wall Battle and Scenario 2 City Battle.
Yeah, man. So Wall Battle, classic. Classic fighting over walls.
Yeah.
Everybody loves it. Sieges, all that sort of stuff. So war is joined as an army lays siege to the city, housing the stone. The attacker prepares siege towers to assault the walls while the defender readies its defenses. You can't get much more siege battle than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Brooks made up this really dope like deployment map for it.
Yeah.
To show where the attacker's deploying, which is 18 inches up from the short table edge. They can have two siege towers as well. Like I said, that he built, which is super cool. And then the wall for the city is going to go pretty, I think it's dead center, from long edge to long edge. And you have the gate in the middle and two towers that will have their own rules. And then within the city, you've got a mortar to help, kill any possible infantry, and then some city buildings.
Well, the M says monument.
Oh, this isn't the one with the mortars. Never mind.
I think that's the next one.
I didn't scroll down quite far enough. So that's the monument. That'll be the dwarf statues that I printed for this one. Or if somebody has other terrain they wanted to use that was more appropriate, we can do that. I believe both these games are meant to be 2,000 points.
Yep.
And one thing that's fun about, especially this one, is that Brooks has basically come up with old world siege rules.
Yeah.
Dude. Right. We haven't really had these like in full since like 6th edition.
Sort of. They had 8th edition siege rules and they weren't great. It was in the Blood for the Badlands book.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't remember even playing that. I know we definitely played the sixth edition ones a couple times back in the day. I think we had updated it to eighth edition because the Blood in the Badlands one just wasn't good.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot that we, I think we played it by the book, and it made us realize there was a lot that was needed for it to be honestly winnable by either side. I don't remember which side had a better chance. Oh, I think it was the defender. Right.
Yeah, one side was like way had a huge advantage over the other.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. So yeah, this is cool. It's a game length of six rounds, and like Dan said, Brooks knocked out of the park with the siege rules. Really great. Yeah. So the game is played in a 6x4 with a wall deployed down the middle. Each tower has a free cannon included, which may fire towards the deployment side of the wall as long as the tower is controlled by the defender. Black squares are the buildings. So there's a couple of buildings on the inside of the city and then which are impassable. And then players roll off to determine who's the attacker and who's the defender. whoever gets the highest roll gets to choose who they want to be, right? deployment is as normal, other than provided here. The attacker may place a unit of up to 20 light or heavy infantry inside each siege tower, which really makes me want to play dwarves. Because having 20 iron breakers inside those so cool.
Oh my god, yeah. So we'll talk a lot about how Brooks and us helped guide his writing of these to really focus on the use of infantry because it's a narrative event. We want to play the game differently. So infantry have a couple major advantages, like you can put them in the siege towers to protect them on their way to the walls.
Yeah, so the siege towers helps a lot, especially for things like dwarves, because the deployment line is 18 inches up for the attacker, and then there's a 14-inch no man's land, which is three turns of movement for dwarves.
Just go in marching column, and it's only two turns of movement.
Yeah, that's still three, because after I get there, I got to reform. Not everything has veterans, Dan.
Charging on turn four with your three guys left.
Not veterans, whatever the other one's called.
Drilled.
Yeah, that's the one. The defender sets up in the city and may place any infantry or artillery unit it desires in the wall. Any artillery set up in the wall may only shoot outside of the wall. It may not fire at units on or in the city. Scouts for the attacker may deploy on the attacker side of the wall, and scouts for the defender can deploy anywhere. no more than one unit may be placed in ambush. And I like that mainly because it doesn't really make sense for the attacker to ambush inside the city?
I mean, so to some point, but like having more than one unit would be a bit much for sure.
That's what I mean. So like, let's say you're playing Beastmen, which you're going to, and you get attacker, right? Rawr. And you put half your army in ambush, and like half your army shows up already inside the city. It's like, wait a second. Narratively, you could say like further up the wall, they broke in.
Yeah.
And then this is the other part where they haven't broken in, but
they jumped really high and it took them a while to land.
No, that's orcs.
What?
That's orcs.
I also like what he did with scouts, that the attacker can only deploy scouts on the on their side of the wall. You can't scout within the walls already.
Which makes sense.
That's a bit much. Ambushing within the walls, I think, makes a lot more sense. And there's only one unit at maximum anyway, so
and ambushers are usually, they can be, scouters are kind of your stealthy dudes, so I could see how scouts would show up inside the city as opposed to ambushers, but the ambush I kind of get as well. Makes me really want some dwarf miners so I can just pop them right outside this one of these buildings. You'd be like, what's up, I'm here now.
You seriously need to get some miners, because
I really do.
So good.
They're
and
so
they look
fun.
So cool, and they've got candles on their hats.
Yeah, and they attack with picks, which doesn't do a lot of damage in Minecraft. And I got to be honest with you, if I hit you with a pickaxe, it would hurt you a lot.
And they're like war picks, too.
Yeah.
They're made for stabbing things, like rocks.
They're made for chopping things, man. But, you chop the rock.
You chop the rock.
You chop rocks.
Let's take a look at these special rules that Brooks came up with, starting with the siege towers. So super cool. So siege towers can charge the walls and have movement 7. Units within a siege tower may make a normal charge out of it. Siege Tower has toughness 7, 7 wounds, and armor save of 4+. So it's kind of like a souped-up chariot. If a siege tower is reduced to 0 wounds, roll 1d6 for each model inside, and roll on a roll of 4+, that model takes a strength 4 AP 1 hit. Survivors are placed at the base of the siege tower, which is left in place and blocks line of sight. And then it has another rule with it called Thud. After completing a charge against the walls, place a small template at the front of the siege tower and on top of the wall. Roll a d6 for each model wholly or partially under the template. On a roll 4+, that model takes a strength 5 AP 1 hit as the door falls down on the infantry to disembark, to allow the infantry to disembark. So classic moment of the siege tower slams into the wall, and then the big, like, armored door comes crashing down, and it might crush some dudes on the wall.
I can picture the whole thing. I can picture all of this happening, and it sounds so dope.
I can't wait.
I love it. I can't wait.
I'm very excited. First of all,
dwarves inside of a siege tower is hilarious. That moves over double their movement. I love it. I love it so much. I'm going to put so many iron breakers in these towers.
So I think the idea...
Dan hates his life right now.
I think the idea here is with the movement 7, you move up one turn, and the next turn you're charging.
Yep.
So
which I love.
It's there a turn or two sooner. That's great.
Right, but, and the balance there is there's a cannon in each tower, right?
Yeah, and the other balance is that there's only two of these, and they can only have infantry.
Yep. So it's
I think it's great,
bro. We got some walls, which Brooke made a ton of. Brooks made a ton of. He made so many. Him and his kids.
He got labor there.
He did free labor, man. It's free real estate.
It's just there. Anybody can take it. It's like ducks in the park.
You can just take those. Did you know that? You can just pick them up.
I love that line. I don't know what it's from, but I love that line.
Nobody's going to stop you. Somebody might try to stop you, but you can just take them home. Anyways, I want ducks so bad.
Don't go to the park and take ducks. That's a joke.
We have a lot of parks. One of the parks is actually named after me.
Oh, yeah?
Hoyt Park.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know who it's named after, but it's my park, and I'm stealing it. But anyways, I'm an idiot. Well, let's fight on some walls, folks. There are multiple 6-inch sections of the wall, which are T6 weapon, or 8 wounds with an armor save of 5+, and a 5 of ward save.
Weapon skill 8 walls.
Weapon skill 8 walls. You charge these walls, they charge you back.
It's like a demon wall from Final Fantasy.
Yes.
A wall will fight you.
That's gross. Because it's Final Fantasy. If a section of wall is destroyed, each model on it takes a strength 5 AP 1 hit. That section of the wall is removed and the survivors are placed on the city side of the wall, where that wall section was originally. Models not on that section should be moved towards those on the ground if necessary to maintain unit coherency. Walls block line of sight for units behind them and are considered impassable terrain. Units in the city and on the wall may move on top of the wall and down into the city as normal, provided, however, that charges may only be made down into the city and not onto the wall. Now, if you want to fight on walls, here's what you do. Ready? Infantry may charge up walls and are considered to be using ladders. This is deemed a disordered charge. Makes complete sense. Having rank bonuses while you're climbing a ladder, especially while there's a dwarf on top counting as he chops your friends down.
Wow. That's rude of Gimli.
It was dope, and that's how I want to go out.
No, I'm going to
be on top
awesome.
Of a wall counting as I chop down jerks.
So good. But
22, 23. Anyways, defenders on the wall should be moved back along the wall where possible to allow for attackers, models, units to be placed in unit coherency. Where coherency is not possible, any of the attackers' models which may not be placed are left at the bottom of the wall, and the attackers considered to have made a disordered charge. Once again, makes sense. They're still waiting their turn. Wait your turn before you go on the ladder.
But disordered is no initiative bonus.
That's what I said.
Disrupted is no rank.
I also said that. And again, it makes sense. If you're climbing up ladders, you're not going to get your initiative bonus. So fighting on the wall is in close quarters. As a result, units are limited to 5 wide. Models on top of the wall which make ranged attack have partial cover until the end of the opposing player's next turn. Models on top of the wall which do not make ranged attack are considered to have full cover. Here's why. When you go to shoot over the wall, you don't have as much cover as when you're bunkering underneath the wall parapet stuff. So again, it makes sense.
Yeah, because we're just assuming that they're going to stand up to shoot.
Oh, yeah. For avoidance of doubt, models on walls are not considered to be on hills and may not fire an additional rank unless they are able to do so through some other rule like volley fire. Right.
I love that Brooks is a lawyer, so he thinks to put in those little clarifications.
Absolutely. It came up today in the Discord. I was like, God, this guy's a lawyer. I don't know. I don't even remember what he said. There was too many good words.
A lawyer about it.
Yeah, just why don't you just lawyer about it, Brooks? I'm going to buy him a shirt that says that. I'm just going to lawyer about it.
That's so good.
He's going to wear it to
so
a hearing. So
dumb,
though.
But great.
Your Honor, what if I just lawyered about it, though?
You got me.
You know what? I didn't think about it.
Court adjourned.
The defense rests. I'm very
Case
tired.
Done. You win.
You win.
Lawyer jargon. Can you tell it's been a long week?
Lawyer jargon. That's how I win cases. Your Honor. Your Honor falls back. Just a little smoochy. Overruled. That gives ground or falls back in good order, moves back along the wall as far as possible, stopping short if another unit blocks its path. A unit that flees on the wall falls back along the wall in its normal fleeing distance. If it's unable to complete its flee move, it jumps off the side associated with that player, attack, or defender. Each model in the unit rolls a d6 as if fleeing through an enemy unit. On a roll 1 through 3, the model takes a wound. After falling from the wall, the unit continues to flee in the direction directly away from the enemy unit, which caused it to flee. Could you imagine being so afraid of what you're fighting on top of this wall that you're like, I'm going to jump down and hope I don't die?
Right. My first thought is, oh man, good thing we're not using Warhammer Fantasy roleplay fall damage.
Mordheim.
I had one recently where somebody fell 3 yards.
Uh-huh. That's 9 feet. It's casual 9 feet.
Yeah, it was 9 feet because they were able to catch themselves a little bit. Uh-huh. And they would have taken enough damage that like they broke their hip.
Yeah, that's like falling off a roof.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know, they used a fate point so it didn't happen, but it was like, oh god, that I got my players so terrified of fall damage in Warhammer, which is appropriate.
Dude, falling sucks.
Was it Danny sprained her ankle a month ago now, and when she did it at the gym, she was doing a rope climb. And she said she just hopped down like the last 3 feet, but her 1 foot landed on the rope on the floor and it ended up, she landed weird and she sprained her ankle. And then when she got home, she was like, I'm never giving you crap about fall damage again. She's like, it was not far at all. And it hurts so bad. And she had a bad sprain.
It's so painful to just have your body hit earth.
Anything, you know what I mean? Right? Just
yeah.
Bonk.
So Charles, Adepticon Charles, was telling me about how Marines apparently take like multiple weeks to learn how to fall.
Yeah.
Like to just learn how to fall properly. They like, you just fall on your face and then they put you on a platform and you fall on your face and then they put you on a higher platform and you fall on your face. And it's like, you don't catch yourself. You just fall on your face and you learn how to do it properly. I'm like, that sounds awful.
Right? No, thank
you. Just wake up and fall down. He could have been joking. I have no idea. Right? I believe anything Charles tells me.
He could absolutely be making that tracks with him too. Just making stuff up that he knows we're just going to believe because what do we know? Listen, what I'm we sure. know is extra rules for monsters and war machines in this scenario.
Yeah, which Charles might have made up, but let's read them.
He could have. They may attack the wall. Of course, any monster which destroys a section of wall may move forward 2d6 inches, stopping 1 inch before contacting any model which survived the wall's collapse. So they get a little boost, a little surge forward as they smash through the wall, but they can't use that to charge.
Except for the bone grinder giant. I'm making up my own rules for this where it just walks over it.
Oh, okay. Because we're going to see a bunch of bone grinder giants.
Well, we are now. I just made the rule.
We are now. what about those two towers we have on the wall there, Taylor?
Great movie. So the towers can be controlled as per the rules on page 275.
Oh, no, there's more rules.
Yeah, of the BRB.
I don't have that open.
It's the big rule book. It's the blue rule book. A unit in a tower can only be charged by flying creatures or infantry on the wall. Each tower is armed with a cannon, which may only fire towards the attacker's deployment side of the map by the player that controls the tower. The cannons do not come with any crew and cannot fight or be destroyed. Reminder, only an infantry unit of strength 10, unit strength 10 or less, or a character whose troop type is infantry can control a tower. And that's from the BRB. The tower and the section of wall upon which it rests are indestructible, which means it cannot be destructed.
That's Tim's favorite thing.
Correct.
Things can't be destructed. I said it just for him.
He heard it. Wherever he is, he was like, thanks, Taylor. I'm going to go over the gate, too, so deal with it, Dan. There's also a gate.
Okay.
It's a very nice gate. There's many like them, but this one is mine. During the start... During the start of turn subphase, the gate may be opened by the defender for their units to leave or enter the city, provided, however, that the gate will not open if there is an attacking unit within 6 inches of it. The gate closes at the end of the defender's turn. The gate may be attacked and destroyed by monsters and war machines. It has toughness 7, 7 wounds, armor 4 plus. If destroyed, do not remove that section of wall. Monsters are considered to have line of sight through it, and it no longer counts as impassable terrain. They can go through the gate. Nor do units on top of that section of the wall fall, as with other sections of a wall. A monster unit that destroys the gate may make a free move forward up to 2d6 inches, while the gate section is easily distinguishable from the rest of the wall. I feel like there was more to that. But anyways, the gate, essentially, you destroy the gate itself and not the wall holding it up.
Right? Yep.
So.
And that's why its stats are a little bit, it's got different. Lower... It's interesting. I like what he did here. It has higher toughness, but lower wounds and better armor, because we can kind of assume it's a big, you know, piece of metal as opposed to stone. And so I like how he made it a little bit different.
Yep. Dan.
What?
What's that M sitting in there?
M for mortar.
No.
Wait. JK. It's the monument. So probably our dwarf statues. A shining monument, statue, or inspiring edifice, which may be controlled under the rules for controlling a special feature by proximity on page 272, has no game effect other than to award victory points because there are no special rules in the scenario already. Literally what he wrote. And I think that's one thing we discussed in our chat at one point. Like, should we add more rules for the monument? And we're all like, nah, there's enough already.
Yeah.
The monument is the goal, right? The attackers want to get to the monument. So then we have our victory conditions. Units award victory points as usual, fled or dead or below 25%.
Yep.
Each section of the wall destroyed awards the attacker 50 extra victory points. So decent amount. I think you can get 200 that way.
Yep.
Which is nice if you destroy 10, the whole
15, 20.
Nuts. The player controlling a tower at the end of the game, not siege tower, but tower on the wall. Each one is 200 victory points per tower controlled.
Dang.
So those are really important for the defender to defend because they can't be destructed. So someone's got to be in them.
And only 10 infantry can be inside of it.
I love the gate. If the gate is destroyed, you award the attacker 100 VP, but if the gate survives, the defender wins that 100 VP.
Yeah, it's very important. Keep people out.
Whoever's controlling the monument is awarded 100 victory points.
Dope.
And then the defender is awarded 50 VP for each siege tower it destroys. So they can't get points for destroying the walls, but they can get points for destroying the siege towers.
Yeah, man, pretty straightforward, but there's definitely some interesting things. You have to build a list to do both, right? 2,000 point list that can do both, because you're rolling off to see who gets the stuff and the things, right? So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, my beastmen do not want to be the defenders here. I'll just rush them all out from the walls anyway.
And I gotta climb down these ladders.
Oh, that reminds me. One time way back in the day, me and my brother Timmy were playing a siege game, and the only thing that we had to use for the castle was this Lego set he had that was like I don't even remember what it was, but it was definitely meant to be like wooden fortress that like was in a circle, but you could like open it up and make it flat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool. So we used that, and can't remember who I had, but I know I had a bunch of dudes on the walls, and then I had a unit of cavalry on the inside. Mm-hmm. And he like moved up with this stuff, probably dwarves. I want to say I had wood elves for some reason. And I think and I had a bunch of wild riders on the inside or something like that, but maybe it was high elves. And I opened up the gate and charged my unit of cavalry out and just wrecked his infantry units. And he was like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, why not? My shooting wasn't doing anything." And he was like, "That's not how this is supposed to work." And I'm like, "This is how they would do siege battles.
Tally ho, mother effort."
The whole time. They'll do a coordinated assault and then retreat back into the walls.
Yeah. It's not called a tally ho. What is it called?
Tally ho.
Sally forth.
Oh, yeah. But it was so funny because he was like, "Wait, you're opening the gate?" And I was like, "Yeah. And then next turn, I'm going to charge you with my cavalry." It was great. But for battle two, so the idea here is that we'll switch up opponents and essentially do the same thing, roll off, I think. Or no. Well, we might have to roll off depending on
what's what. But states we'll go, it in
we'll
there.
There. Yeah, well, so we'll get there. yep. So he drew up a really, again, we're playing deployment is on the short ends of the table, which every time I've looked at this map, I did not realize that until just now for some reason. Even though they're pretty clearly marked, for some reason I thought we were still deploying on the long ends. So we have, this is going to be in the city streets. So theoretically, the attackers eventually break through, regardless of how the first battle goes. And now they're crashing through the streets, trying to, you know, pillage and raise the city to whatever end they want here. So we've got this cool map he made up to show where buildings should be to represent the city, which is why I've been printing buildings like crazy for the last like 2 months.
First of all, it looks like the British flag.
Right. And he said that was on purpose.
Secondly, it looks like an angry British flag.
It kind of has like a nose in the middle. It looks like a little bit like Strong Bad.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It totally does.
Just realized.
He types with boxing gloves on his hand.
He does. It's amazing.
Anyways, go on.
So all this, so it looks kind of like the British flag, and there's a big set of buildings near the middle. And the whole point of these buildings is it's going to limit the movement of things that aren't infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, infantry have a huge advantage in this scenario because they can just kind of move through the buildings. We had talked about just making all those areas completely impassable. And then we were kind of like, well, you're not going to, every fight is just going to be crashing into each other down a street.
Yeah.
With infantry being able to move through the buildings, they can actually change their facing and you're going to get more flanks and whatnot. So
yep.
We amended that a little bit. and then there's a clock tower on one side. That's like a special, building, and then an arsenal on the other. And then in the middle, is the old one's stone. That is a arcane monolith from the regular terrain rules.
Yeah, man.
Let's see. The clock tower counts as a tower, again, from the terrain rules. In addition, ranged units within the clock tower are able to shoot through or over one building block as if it wasn't there. Kind of like being on a hill, not forever sight.
And then arsenals. This is where the mortars come in, Dan.
There it is. A for mortar.
A for mortar.
There's an A in mortar.
There sure is, buddy.
This episode be XNL Tactics. A is for mortar. Yes. And people have to listen to find out what the hell that means.
A's for mortar. That's good enough for me. Oh my gosh. It's an arsenal, which is a mortar. The controlling unit controls a mortar and may make one free mortar shot per turn at the ballista skill of the unit controlling it. The mortar may not be destroyed and has no crew.
See, the A on the map stands for a mortar. It's so good. And Brooks made up a bunch of mortars to have on the table on whatever piece of terrain we might have there, which is pretty cool. I like that you get a free, like, mortars are not seen as great things, but it's free. You just have to have a unit controlling that piece of terrain, and then they can go blasty blast. And if we're focusing on infantry, mortar is going to be more useful.
Absolutely. So the game's played on a 6x4 mat, 2,000 points, 6 turns is normal. The black area should be sectioned off by many buildings and low linear obstacles. Did you read this already?
No.
No, okay.
I just kind of described it.
Yeah, each area is a single terrain feature with blocks line of sight, blah, blah, blah. The ochre squares that we went over are key points. Streets between buildings should be approximately 6 inches wide. Wider is fine. Building blocks should be 12 inches on their longest side and 8 inches on their shorter, et cetera, et cetera. The nice thing, no key point should be able to draw line of sight to any other key point, which is really great. You should not be able to see the A mortar to the old one stone to the clock tower, right?
Yeah. The whole point is that you're fighting in these confined streets, so you're...
Which I've always wanted to do.
You get a little split up from each other.
I've always wanted this. This has been a dream of mine for so long.
Aw.
I'm supposed to bring my cobblestone street map, aren't I?
I was assuming you would. That'll look real good on one of these tables.
Dude, I can't remember anything ever.
Do it. So
please remind me.
Do it. You expect me to remember?
No.
I'm any better?
You and I are the worst. You deploy as normal other than provided here, right? So it's 8 inches on the short edge. Each player is limited to one scouting unit. In addition, each player may place one infantry unit in ambush. These specially placed units may emerge from a side of the board as usual or from a building block. Any side of the block connected to the side of the board. Connected to any side of the board, right? All other ambushes arrive as normal, which is pretty cool.
We're in the building the whole time.
Guess what? I'm right here. Hello. It's a militia. The militia are jumping out. It's angry wives and pizza cooks.
What?
Yeah, it's Tilly. Yeah. So there's objectives.
That wasn't even English. What just happened?
It's Tilia.
Wow.
The pizza cooks.
Sure.
I guess you were pizza... making
a Desperate Housewives reference at first, and I was very confused.
Yes, I've absolutely seen that show. I don't even watch shows that I do want to watch, Dan.
I know.
That's why I was so confused. I just got somebody into Hazbin Hotel, and they were telling me you got to watch Hell of a Boss because it's so great. And I was like, that sounds like work, but it's going to be awesome.
Well, it's all coming to Amazon Prime, so you don't have to find it on YouTube anymore.
That's fine. I don't mind YouTube. I'm a YouTube professional now.
That's true.
You do that one. I see you highlighted it.
I was copying your highlights. All right, but our objectives here. The Old One Stone and the Arsenal are controlled by proximity. Remember, the Old One Stone counts as an arcane monolith, which I believe gives like magic bonuses and stuff. Tingle in the Turkish. Air, magic resistance 1. Actually, it hurts magic, which is cool. Worth 50 extra victory points at the end. And the clock tower is controlled by occupancy. It says further, the arsenal and clock tower can only be controlled by infantry, whereas the old stones can be controlled by the old one stone can be controlled by any unit because you don't have to go into the stone. You're just near it.
Listen, the last time I went in the stone went into me and it was real weird.
Sounds weird. I hope you weren't romancing the stone.
I need to be the marble. I need to date the marble. I need to lick the marble.
Movie reference.
It's from SpongeBob. So, special movement rules. Speaking of how dope infantry are, infantry that contacts a building block can expend half of their total movement for that round to enter and immediately exit that building block on any other side. So, for example, a unit with a movement of 5 can march 1 inch to a building, enter it, and exit another side for 5 inches of its total movement and have 4 remaining. A unit that exits a building can choose which direction it faces. Units cannot charge through buildings. This is really great for me as a dwarf player because that means I'm going to move just as slow as everyone else, which is fantastic, without moving through the buildings.
I love this next one here. Units may march within 8 inches of another unit if they are not in line of sight of that unit. I kind of feel like the rule should be. If units on opposite sides of a building, they can still march. You're not distracted from marching by a unit you're not aware of because this is very different than an open battlefield.
Yeah. Which once again should be the case anyways.
I agree.
Right. It makes it more difficult because then do you stop having the ability to march once you can then see that unit?
Stop it.
That's the question that's going to come up on a normal battlefield if that was the rule.
Stop it.
Right. So anyways, fleeing directly away from opponents may be impossible depending on location within the city. If such instances In such instances, even, a unit will flee along the path most away from the enemy and may pivot as necessary to go around buildings while following streets. Pivots are treated as part of their flee movement, which makes sense. You're not going to try and flee through a tiny doorway. You're going to try and flee down the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Again, nice clarification.
Yep.
It's supposed to be impassable, but if it's infantry, it's not really impassable. So having that clarification will lead to quicker gameplay.
And the last bit is probably my favorite for this because the game itself is going to be so complicated just because of the like constrained movement and, you know, having the city streets and all that sort of stuff. The victory conditions are real easy. Whoever controls the clock tower and armory, get 100 VPs. Whoever controls the stone gets 200. And then units are worth normal VPs.
Oh, units Super are easy. Worth their normal victory points.
Yes.
Can't read and thought it said units are worth no victory points.
No, that's definitely not what it says.
There's way more letters than that.
There is actually a no in that word, but there are
that's
more
what I saw. I saw the N-O and ignored all the other like 10 letters, 9 letters.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there's anything that you've learned from this episode, it's A is for mortar and normal means no.
All right, so aside from being super pumped to play this, so I wrote up a list. I amended an older list to fit these scenarios a bit better. Took out like chariots that don't really fit in the idea here.
Yeah.
Like in a real siege, you would have chariots still like for when you take the gate down. But I really wanted to focus on more infantry that I probably won't normally. Like if I was going to a tournament, like I have a unit of 20 Bestigor, which I normally would not take if I was like going to a tournament, right?
Sure.
Because that's not the best unit. So I got a Beast Lord here. He's my standard Beast Lord with the shield, the blackened plate, Dawnstone, giant blade, and the gnarled hide. So Beastmen have no way to get a ward save other than the Talisman of Protection.
Dumb.
Got nothing else. So he's got
extremely dumb
a 2-up rerollable armor save.
Oh, heck yeah.
Because he's got the blackened plate is full plate,
mm-hmm.
4-up, and then, oh no, I'm sorry, it's a 2-up that he rerolls ones. And then a shield makes it 3, and then I gave him the gnarled hide mutation, which is another +1. So he's got 2-up armor save, and then the Dawnstone allows him to reroll armor save rolls of 1.
Sure.
And then the giant blade, is just strength +1, armor bane 2, but multiple wounds 2.
Yeah, it's a real big blade.
So he can kill stuff pretty good.
excuse me.
With him, there's a great Brace Shaman on foot with the Talisman of Protection. That's why the Beast Lord doesn't have it, so the great Brace Shaman has any save. Mm-hmm. He also has the Ruby Ring of Ruin, the Hag Tree Fetish, of course, and Elementalism. And I think I took there was a reason I took Elementalism. Unfortunately, he doesn't have access to either spell that has the cool new thing, templates.
So what I'm hearing...
Plague of Rust. That was the main spell I want.
So the Hag Tree is the one that allows you to reroll failed stuffies?
Reroll failed rolls to wound with magic missiles.
Yeah, maybe don't do that, though.
Why not?
Because, ow.
There's only one.
What do you mean there's only one? It's 16d6, strength 1, reroll everything.
I could roll low. You don't know.
I do know.
And then to round out my characters, I'm actually planning on taking a BSB, which I almost never take anymore. But it's a Wargore with the Banner of Outrage. So, I can reroll my leadership test for Primal Fury.
Nice.
And he's almost certainly going to go in the Bestigor. So I just realized now I'm going to have to change this list a little bit more after we talk about it. And I gave him heavy armor, a shield, the Pelt of the Dark Young, which is a cool beastman armor that just gives +1 armor and magic resistance 2 to him and any unit he joins.
Nice.
Yeah. And then the Pelt of Midnight. He's got 2 pelts. He's special. mutation, which is -1 to shoot him and his unit.
Oh, fair enough. Cool.
So he's all about debuffs.
That's going to go great either way if you're attacker or defender.
Yeah.
Right.
That's going to be really nice. And kill stuff. So my core units, I'm just realizing now I'm going to have to change because I can't. The siege towers are up to 20 models, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a unit of 27 gore with full command, additional hand weapons, and the vitriolic totem. So they have poison attacks. And then 20 best of gore with the war banner and full command. So I'm probably going to, like, let's drop the best of gore down to 19 because I know I'm going to put the war gore with them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do the same thing with the gore because I'll put the beast lord with them. And then we'll take another, let's take some razor gore or we take some minute. No, I can't take minotaurs because I can't put them in core unless I have a doom bull or a minotaur general. So we just take another little unit of gore. I could actually take some ungore.
There you go.
I don't know why I would.
No, they're the worst.
They're awful. We could take a bunch of dogs. Let's take some Chaos Warhounds. I never take Warhounds. Let's do that for funsies.
And I like the ones you have, too. They're still like the demon thingies, right?
Yeah, they're the plastic Warhound models, but I use them as flesh hounds for years. So they're like fur is black, like my corn demons kind of looks lava-y. And then their manes are painted like fire, more or less.
Okay.
So let's do two units of five warhounds with, should we give them armored hide, poisoned attacks, or vanguard? I don't think vanguard's needed here. I think plus one armor or poisoned attacks. The cost the same.
This is another unit with poison attacks?
Yeah. I like poison.
Yeah.
Just because I have 10 points left to spend on the list. So it's like, we could just give something neat to each Warhound unit.
So here's the deal. They're gonna run up and they're gonna try and kill things.
Yeah.
So poison. Do that.
Yeah. Okay. So now my list can even better fits the scenario. So I can actually put those units of beastmen in the towers. Now Warhounds are there to be annoying. And then I've got a unit of three dragon ogres. and then a unit of 10 harpies.
I hate harpies.
I got scouts there. They won't do much, but they're cool. And then I have my monsters, a Shaggoth with a great weapon, heavy armor, and a Gorgon.
Gorgon.
And they're going to go smash them walls apart.
The Gorgon's the best.
I love the Gorgon. It's so much better than it used to be.
See, that's the thing. I kind of want to use Slaanesh just so I can have some monsters, right? But fair. I feel like dwarves are just going to be, they're going to feel the most made for this besides Empire, right? A whole bunch of infantry marching around being like, deal with me because I'm here now.
And again, they fit really well whether they end up being the attacker or defender.
Yeah, because I'm defending the thing that I found that's a big old magical thing that I don't want anyone else to have, where I'm like, dude, humans, why do you have that? Give that to me now.
Let me defuse this bomb for you.
You are not old enough to even have any idea what that is. Give me that back. Yeah. No, I think it makes sense.
Where was it? Yeah, so I know Brooke shared a bunch of pictures of his playtest of this in the Discord. It was dwarves versus dwarves. But I know Brooks's dwarves had some Empire allies, which he's been really enjoying trying out lately. And it looks awesome. These siege towers look great. The castle walls look awesome. And the towers, the models deployed on it look great. The old GW walls just were never big enough to actually put units on and whatnot. But these are nice. Correct. Like the walls, them like is a good 6 to 8 inches deep here. We can actually have units in combat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got some sweet pictures like in action, which is pretty cool. And the dwarves won, I remember.
Shut up.
That took you a second.
I'm tired, man.
I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
It's too dang bad. Oh my gosh. Dude, I'm pretty stoked. This is Warhammer that I've always, you know, everybody always, you put down rank and file and you're like, where's the siege battle? Where's the city fights? You know, all that sort of stuff. Like you can show up on a friggin' hill all day, you know, with a whole bunch of open terrain all day long. But like, that's not what I want. I want sieges.
It's not what I want.
That's not what I want here. I want sieges. I still would really love to make a table that is the Underway, because I just think that would be stupid fun.
That would be super cool. No, I'm so excited for this, and we'll talk with Brooks about making after we play through this, and you know, as an event, we'll have more playtesting of it. We'll probably refine tune things as issues come up potentially.
Yeah, figure it out.
And we'll talk with Brooks about making it like available for people to play on their own.
Yeah.
Throw out a couple of fan-made scenarios out there for people to try out.
And I'll talk to Brooks about it. I'm sure he'll be totally fine with it, but I'll put a link in the description for this episode too, for the rules.
Nice.
Yeah, if he's cool with it. If he's not, then like no big deal. We'll, you know, release it after the event. But if he's cool. But which Brooks is very cool.
He is cool.
He's very cool. I'm not trying to butter him up, but he's pretty cool. I'd hang out with him. At least once.
Again. This time we won't go to the barbecue place with the vegetarian.
Yeah, dude. It was called Brooks, though.
And
we took Brooks to Brooks.
It was so perfect.
It wasn't perfect, but we didn't know. And now we know. Anyways.
Now we know. Knowing's half the battle.
And power is fame. Knowledge is power.
Power is fame?
Power is fame.
I never heard that
I think
before.
It's a Meatloaf song. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I love that we got to hear Dan's list. I haven't written one yet.
Shocking.
I know, it's weird. I'm going to have Tim write one for me, which means that the Discord's going to write one for me. No,
it'll be illegal. And
it'll be three different armies and it'll be illegal.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, no, it's going to be an absolute blast. So May 17th. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Be still there or be a rectangle. Don't come this weekend. This coming week. Don't come Mother's Day weekend. It's going to be bad. This episode's going to be out by the time Mother's Day's weekends is over. So don't worry about it. I'm so tired. I got to go sleep.
I love that you just rolled with it. Mother's Day's weekends is over.
You know what? That's what I appreciate about you. Oh my gosh. Dan.
Yeah.
I love you.
I love you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love you as well. It has been an absolute blast. I can't wait to do our wrap-up episode for this event as well in the future. It's going to be stupid fun. If you want to find more of us, though, hey, we got this website. It's called professionalcasual.com. It's got all our socials and our other podcasts, blogs, merch, all the stuff's on there. You can get Beards, Ears, and Skulls merch. You sure can.
Heck yeah.
It's an exemplary octuple confrontation mug. We're going to start recording those again soon. Those are stupid fun. other podcasts like Gapapa. It's a grim podcast of Perilous Adventure. It is a WFRP WFRP 4th edition actual play playing the Enemy Within campaign. And there are over 230 episodes now?
Today, for patrons, because they get... episodes a week early, they got 261 today.
So you are over 262.
261 was out for free to everybody else. It's crazy.
261, I heard, was actually tons of fun.
Oh yeah, I'm sure Tim said that at some point.
I realize your excited. Name on here is Scale the Walls.
you always see it right at the end.
Because I keep looking at your beautiful face.
Where's that?
It's right there. I'm pointing at it. It's right there.
Scary.
Right there.
Don't poke me.
Anyway, twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. Once again, Dr. D might be streaming right now. He's been streaming so much. It's incredible.
He is.
We've got, the Power of Fate is Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then Dr. D's Disaster Zone, whenever the hell he feels like it. Ben's solo mission, and I think we should get a Starfinder 2E here pretty soon as well, which would be super duper de-dopers magopers.
Yeah, we've been leave too us a long reveal. Since we played that game.
Too long. Apple Podcast or Audible. 5-star review would be great anywhere, but Apple Podcast and Audible really helps the show out a lot. Hit the Discord. Smack it with your big old smacky fist. Hit the link. It should be in the description. We're having a friggin' blast in there. And we talk about Old World pretty much every day in the Old World channels. So come hang out with us. Dan, you got anything you want to add?
May your dice ever roll sixes. Unless it's a leadership test.
Be good to each other. I love y'all so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2e actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolforp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.